Welcome, everybody, to Nerd Critic, a podcast that dives deep into movies. I apologize.
No, you're doing great.
Yeah, okay.
You should have just kept it up.
I know, but I felt awkward.
Now it's awkward. As always, just power through, man.
A deep dive into big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. I am here with Jordan, our residential critic.
I am a critic of all residences.
Sorry.
And I am here with CJ, our studied and credentialed nerd. But I feel like that's also totally true. You are studied and credentialed as a nerd.
That's true. And you are...
I live here.
You do.
I live in this room. Critic. I never leave this room. This chalkboard is my dinner table. It's my bed.
It just pops right off.
It's my notebook. It's my computer. This is CJ's. He just lets me borrow it for these episodes.
Are we gonna post this video? There's a video. We're recording. I'm confused.
We already did this.
We did already do this.
Yeah.
Because we did this last time.
Yeah. And the cat's out of the bag because we're wearing the same clothes.
That's what.
So you know now that we record two episodes in one night.
Yeah.
But what's the big deal?
People. Like, I don't know.
Who cares? That just shows that we're more dedicated than even you thought.
Yeah. So
we carve out a significant amount of time every week in one big block.
It's the same night every week.
To just record and record and record.
Yeah, it's true. And how we keep up the energy, I'm not sure. Yeah.
How, you don't know. We don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It's one of the great mysteries of this great country.
So I'm still wearing my Bizarro shirt.
Yeah, and I'm still wearing my...
But you unzipped your jacket, so they don't know.
Well, no. I mean, I unzipped my jacket toward the beginning of last episode.
Oh, okay.
Here, I'll zip it back up.
The cat is very out of the bag.
Well, here we go. So, we're here today. Last time we talked about 1917, and this time we're talking about a beautiful
day
in the neighborhood.
There
should be an article on the front. It should be A or a. Probably
is there not.
The,
it's
no,
just,
it's just beautiful.
We're talking about... Beautiful day in the neighborhood. I'm going to apologize now because, like you know, in the 1917 episode, my voice is going away. And I tried last time to drink water like under the radar, but then like the bottle popped. So I'm just gonna drink water
because
if I don't, I'm gonna end up sounding
CJ,
very raspy.
CJ, if you feel like you
smoky,
have
smoky,
if you that's yeah, that's great.
I was trying to think of an actor that had a smoky voice, and I was gonna compare myself to them.
Scarlett Johansson.
I'd actually be okay with that.
We'll take it. Also, if you feel like you have to apologize for drinking water to our listeners.
I know. Well, it's a random noise that they don't hear. Or they do hear. They hear it because it's a noise. But it's a random noise that they don't know what it is.
Sure.
Also, did you mean the Oscar-nominated Scarlett Johansson?
I guess so.
I guess you did.
Did she get nominated
for Marriage Story? Yeah.
Hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine. Here's my hot take on Marriage Story.
Okay. Ooh.
I think I've actually told you this before, but I don't think I've said it on this show. So here's what I think, and my wife and I had a conversation after we watched the movie. By the way, difficult movie to watch as a married couple.
I watched it by myself.
But we talked about it, and we agreed that Adam Driver, and I don't think we're doing an episode on it, so this will be our impromptu episode about it.
Sure.
Our episode is going to be like probably 45 seconds.
I'm pretty sure they're here to listen to A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. But go ahead, Marriage Story.
So anyway, so both of us agreed that Adam Driver was spectacular.
The Oscar-nominated Adam Driver.
Amazing. Yeah.
Amazing.
Like Adam freaking Driver. And that Scarlett Johansson was really good. And maybe the best she's ever been. Great. Great job, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Not on the same level as Adam Driver. So the hot take is that Marriage Story was a pretty good movie. Marriage Story would have been a great movie, a really absolutely astoundingly good movie, if someone else had been cast across from Adam Driver. And the person that we decided should have been cast across from Adam Driver is, do you remember who I mentioned?
I did. Claire Foy.
Claire Foy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just try to, if you've seen Marriage Story, try to imagine Marriage Story with Claire Foy instead of Scarlett Johansson.
You did have a solid chunk of our friendship where you had a big old crush on Claire Foy.
I still do.
It's since simmered.
Well, I haven't seen her in much lately.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Which is disappointing.
Yeah, she's great.
She's fantastic. Anyway, sorry. I just had to get that out.
So, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Because of your smoky voice.
The movie that we're here to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do the above the line.
Context first.
Okay. I don't want to do above the line. I only know one. I was kidding. And now I feel like because you changed the subject that I'm going to have to deliver later.
Well,
I won't be able to do that.
You could have just let me change the subject, then I could have just taken over.
Yeah, but then it would have been embarrassing if it was like, no, go ahead, CJ, do the above the line, and I say Tom Hanks, and then it's just silent for 45 seconds. You know what I mean?
What do you think of our listeners to judge you for drinking water and of me if you think that I'm just going to leave you hanging for like a solid minute? You'd be like, I'm just going to like fold my arms? And just smirk at you?
Just a shame stare. Anyway, go ahead. Context first.
Go ahead, CJ. Continue embarrassing yourself. See what I'm going to do. Nothing. That's, yeah, man, I must be a monster. All right, so the context is that I saw this movie with my mother pretty much the weekend it came out, and I loved it.
I saw this movie with my father pretty much the weekend it came out, and I loved it.
Good enough for me. All right, moving on. Above the line, it is this movie was directed by Marielle Heller, who is someone I do not know very well.
Nor do I.
Did a great freaking job.
Indeed she did.
It is based on the article Can You Say ... Hero by Tom Junod. It's basically based, I think, a little bit on his life. And his relationship to Mr. Rogers. And it was written by Noah Harpster and Micah Fitzerman Blue, who are not super well-known writers. They are most known for the show Transparent, which has received plenty of recognition critically. Yeah. I haven't actually seen it, so I can't speak to it, but I'm sure it's great because this movie is great and these writers are clearly great. And yeah, the stars are Tom Hanks and Matthew Reese and Chris Cooper and Susan Kalecki Watson, who I only wanted to mention because, well, I want to mention her because she's one of the four bigger actors in the movie. She's not a huge star either, but she is big in TV, mostly for This Is Us, which people seem to love. And Marianne Plunkett, who I only wanted to mention because her like one or two scenes in this were awesome. She plays Fred Rogers' wife, Joanne Rogers, and she just has a couple of really great moments. And she was also in Little Women this year, so she's having a good year. And then Enrico Colantoni. Anyway,
is it? Are you saying two names or
no,
one?
No, just one. Enrique.
Colantoni.
Colantoni.
That anyway, sounds like a name.
AKA Keith Mars from Veronica Mars.
Oh.
Anytime I see him in anything, I like kind of I have a little geek out because I love Veronica Mars. Anyway, that's the cast.
Okay.
There you go.
I learned a lot of stuff there. One, you haven't seen Transparent. Two, you love Veronica Mars.
Love Veronica Mars.
Yeah, I did not know either one of those. Never seen Veronica Mars.
Big crush on Kristen Bell as a result.
Oh, that makes sense.
Also, if you guys haven't seen The Good Place.
I have a crush on Kristen Bell's husband. Because of his podcast. Anyway, it's fine. So I saw this movie. I want to give a little more context. Because
okay.
I talked a little bit about it in my top 10 episode. Because it was in my top 10. But I went to the movie with my dad. We have our movie day. So when I go visit him for the holidays, we try and go at least one day, in the theater. We're just there all day. Three, four movies if we can. Our stamina has not quite been up to par lately. We got to 2.5 and then walked out of one movie because it was a little much. But the first movie of the day was A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. We walk out of this movie, and this is the kind of movie I'm just, first of all, any father-son anything, I'm a sucker for. And this was a newly newly father and son, and an old father and adult son. And it was kind of a three-way father-son story. So I was already hooked. But then you throw in Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers, and I was all in. I was absolutely there. I come out of the movie, and my dad didn't seem to enjoy it at all. He's not at all. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. But he said that it lacked an emotional climax. And so our conversation that followed is going to be what kind of guides my thoughts and my impressions for this episode, because the conversation that followed is the reason that this movie made my top 10. Because if a movie is able to have that effect on people, then obviously it's doing something interesting. Whether it's good or not is up to the viewer, but it's doing something that's effective. So I just wanted to give that context so that when I continue to bring that up, it's not weird. Cool?
I'm with you.
So spoiler-free stuff, or we just go into it?
For this one, I think probably... I just have just a couple of notes. Just if you need to be convinced to go see this movie, here's what I'll say. Tom Hanks and Matthew Rhys are from another planet where everyone is a good actor, and they are A-list actors on that planet. It will make you cry unless you are dead. It is somehow better if you've seen Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary from 2018.
I'll have to trust you. I haven't seen it. I'm sorry.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry.
Can you do me a favor and just watch movies? Can you do that? We have a podcast, movies.
I understand.
Watch more movies.
I understand that you saw 70-plus movies last year in the theater.
And I have a child.
It's true. That's true. End of conversation. I don't know. I can't say anything else.
All right.
But I was close to 60. That's not something. That's nothing to snuff at.
But as clearly evidenced, even if you haven't seen the documentary, you'll just be all sorts of amazed at this movie and at Fred Rogers as a person, as a character.
Yeah.
This after seeing the documentary, it really seems like a very faithful treatment. What I love about the fact that the documentary came out in 2018 is that it really didn't allow for a ton of liberty with his character. Like, mm-hmm. we just saw this guy, like, yeah. in, like, pretty faithful documentary form. Like, you can't then go make changes as to what he's like. We're gonna have certain expectations. And anyway, it's very lovely. Yeah, I also love that this movie isn't pulling a lot of punches, which we'll talk a bit more about.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. Anyway, that's my spoiler-free. If you haven't seen the movie,
go see it.
Go see the movie. You're going to have a lovely time.
Go see it with – it's like a go see with your husband or your wife or your mom or your dad. It's like it's a good, like, take your family members to go see it kind of movie.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very emotionally sophisticated. I will say that. So younger audiences might – be a little bit bored, but if you have any emotional depth whatsoever, you will be very much entertained.
In my notes, spoiler alert from here on out, the first four bullets in my nerd out section are all caps: Tom Hanks, Matthew Rhys, Chris Cooper, Keith Mars. Anyway.
What you're saying is the acting was excellent.
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. And it's not like these guys are so good at acting. It's like, I mean, Tom Hanks is Mr. Rogers. He's just Mr. Rogers.
I mean,
he
couldn't have casted it better.
No.
I mean, it is.
I mean, maybe Daniel Day-Lewis.
Sure.
Not because he makes a natural Mr. Rogers, but because he's so method.
He'll just get
he probably would
it.
Have like cut off part of his legs to be short enough. Anyway, Tom Hanks is I wouldn't say he necessarily felt like the natural choice to me. I don't know who would have necessarily, because Fred Rogers is such an incredibly specific kind of person.
Yeah.
But Tom Hanks absolutely embodies him. And he's, well, I think one of the reasons it's so interesting to me is that he's a totally different body type. Like, Tom Hanks is a larger man. Like, he's not tall or fat, but he's larger. And Mr. Rogers was, if you've seen the documentary, 143 pounds for like 30 years. So like this man.
How tall was he?
Not that tall. He was 5'10", maybe 5'7". No, 5'7". 5'10", 5'9", 5'11". I don't know. He couldn't have been 6 feet. So we got Tom Hanks over here, who's like easily 6 something, and like, you know, a little heftier now. He's getting a little older. He's not the sort of lean 30-year-old bachelor party guy anymore.
He doesn't look like big anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He's not that Tom Hanks. He's like a older middle-aged man who's like in his dad mode. And like hefty, a little heftier, and like, and has a larger presence, and somehow he just is Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, yeah,
I love it.
I mean, the ability that he has to
different hair, different anyway.
When Tom Hanks is on the screen, he fills up the screen.
Yeah,
not physically, but like,
yeah,
he's Tom Hanks, guys.
Yeah,
he's Tom freaking Hanks. But his ability, like the second you see him in this movie, and he comes on, and he's like singing the little jingle.
You're like, oh, that's Mr. Rogers.
So I have a little bit of an embarrassing thing to admit. Before this movie came out, I saw the trailer.
Uh-huh.
No, it wasn't the trailer. I saw a still that was advertising the trailer.
No, it wasn't a still. It was a log line.
It wasn't a log line. I saw the word M and was like, Mr. Rogers. No, it was just a still. It was a still that was advertising the trailer. I saw that still probably 15 times on social media before I realized it was actually Tom Hanks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he just, it was like, I didn't even think of it. The way he was sitting, what he was wearing, the way he looked, it looked like Mr. I just assumed it was, and it was him throwing the shoe to the other hand. Anyway, and so when I saw this movie, and that is the first thing that I see, I'm immediately convinced that that's Mr. Rogers. Not that I didn't see Tom Hanks anymore, but like I just there was no convincing that was needed. There was a lot of performance that I needed to get into the mode. It was like, no, bam, there's Tom Mr. Hanks, Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I started crying immediately. Like I started crying basically as soon as, and I say crying, I teared up like as soon as I saw Matthew Reese's face. Like when they
open the picture board.
Yeah,
thing?
So Mr. Rogers is opening picture board. Is like there's this big like whatever, and he's like opening pictures, and he's like showing us these people. Here's my friends, and then he opens the one on, which is just, it's so great because he opens the one up, and it's a surprise. It's like it's an intense visual surprise because it's like, that's a PG-13 face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like,
he's got blood down the nose.
He's stricken. He's beaten.
Yeah.
he's a man in extreme distress.
Yeah.
It is not an image that you would expect to see in Mr. Rogers, the TV show.
Yeah.
Right? And so he opens that up and you're like, oh. And I'm looking at his face, and as Mr. Rogers is talking about his friend, I'm like getting emotional.
Yeah.
I'm like getting emotional because in that, just immediately in that moment, I know where this movie is going, mm-hmm. and I know what I'm in for. And I know that Matthew Reese, who is, I don't know, he's like a wizard of sympathy. Like you can't help but feel for Matthew Reese was he on screen. I don't know what this guy does. He's so amazing. He deserves all the accolades. Anyway, so I just, that's, I'm kind of going off the rails here.
Yeah, but no, you're
but
fine.
I just was. It was such a great movie, and I really love that opening.
So I want to go into the very specific choices that they made, and it was based on his life. I didn't do any research on how accurate it was or whatnot. Yeah. But
I didn't do that much research.
But I'm just gonna say that it was a character, and the choices that they made in what he did and the actions he made were all scripted. So the choices that they made with his character, and the reason this movie is so good, because the reason this movie is so good for me is, yes, the acting is incredible, but it is one of the most clear main character. Our hero goes from point A, learns something, and ends in point B.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're really happy about
yeah.
it. And it's understandable, and you see why, and it all makes perfect sense. And the decisions that he makes, you understand. It's very sympathetic. Yeah. And so one of the first things that we learn about this guy is that he's a brand new dad, right? He's a writer in a magazine and he's a brand new dad. And you're a dad. I'm not a dad. I have a dad, but and I am hoping soon that I will be a dad. So when I see that, immediately I'm thinking, cool, that could be me soon. But that's definitely, I am that guy with an adult father. I'm him. And I just like so immediately got put there. And sure, he's a white dude with dark hair that's maybe a little bit older than me. But obviously I'm in the same realm, so I'm able to sympathize really quickly. But then what I didn't realize, and this is where I'm bringing up the conversation I had with my dad. What I didn't realize is that my dad, who is in his 50s, obviously did the exact same thing, which I thought was really quite interesting, because there are characters that you sympathize with and you're like, you put yourself in their shoes and that's why the movie's good. But I was thinking, I mean, I'm him. I don't have a kid yet, but I'm close. I'm about that age. You know, I'm in my career trying to advance. So many similarities. But somehow my dad, who has me beat by 30 years, 25 years, whatever, is able to do the exact same thing. And so we are set up, and the audience is set up to start the journey at the exact same place, which, when I think about it, makes no sense. Because if my wife is watching, She's a woman. I'm a man. Our experiences that we're bringing to the table are completely different. How are we all relating to this one person, this one human being? And I came to the conclusion, and as I was talking to my father, I came to the conclusion that it was your ability to connect with this character is entirely emotional. That it's not, it's less about everything that's happening around him and what you're studying, and what this movie is hoping that you see and you feel is what's going on in his head and in his heart, not so much what's around him. And the way that we do that is through the vehicle of Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers is there and can somehow read this dude's mind. So every conversation that Mr. Rogers has with this character, you're feeling all of the exact same emotions. You might not work in a magazine. You might not be a dude. You might not have a kid. Doesn't matter. You're feeling the emotions that you're supposed to be feeling in that moment, which then makes you understand how incredible Mr. Rogers was. Anyway, it was an observation that I'm sure a lot of movies do it, but it was the first time that I had consciously realized that in storytelling, the events that happen matter a lot less if you really know what the character is feeling and thinking.
So I would say that the way that you get into the mind of the character and the way that you access or build a sympathetic connection with the character is with the specifics of the story. And that doesn't necessarily mean, in fact, it often doesn't mean that you share those experiences with the character. In fact, I'd say for the most part, shouldn't mean that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't go to a movie and be like, well, I'm only going to care about this character if he's had the same experience as I've had.
Sure.
It's like that shouldn't be what it is. What it should be is you see a very deliberate and specific story told with specificity, meaning you get the details that matter, right? You get like, I want to know what he does for a living. I want to know what his relationship with his boss is like.
Yeah.
I want to know what kind of, like, so he's a writer for a magazine. Great. I want to know what kinds of articles he's written in the past and what motivates him. Like, it's the specifics. I want to know in his relationship with his wife, I want to know who takes care of the kid and how and when. And like, those specifics are going to give me access into understanding him as a person, which is going to allow me to build that sympathetic connection with him so that I can then access the more universal emotions that you're talking about. What we were talking about is the reason that the emotions matter more is because the emotions are universal. We've all been in a place where someone has hurt us and we have to find a way to forgive them.
Yeah.
That is human. That is the human condition. That is a human experience that is totally universal. But we don't get to We don't get to experience vicarious and sympathetic emotional journeys with somebody unless we understand the specifics of their situation so that then we can understand how it works for them. And then that way we can start to see, like, well, really what it is about feeling honest and feeling true. And if it feels true, then it starts to build something in you that is basically hope, right? Like, I understand that it's working for him, and I understand why it's working for him, and I believe that it is working for him, and so therefore there's hope for me.
So the emotions are universal.
Yeah, the emotions are universal. The experiences are specific. And the experiences don't need to match up in order to experience vicarious emotion.
And the specific experiences help shape that universal emotion that we can all relate to.
Yeah, it gives us access to that shared emotion. This is absolutely beautiful. And I would say 100% there's a massive arc. There's a very real climax. I'm curious, in your opinion, what is the emotional climax of this movie?
It was the beginning of the emotional climax for me was his dream sequence and his like thinking he saw Mr. Rogers and chasing him out of the hospital and all of that. And then the conclusion of it was him. What's his character's name in the movie? Matthew Reese, his character.
Lloyd Vogel.
Lloyd, yes, Lloyd. When Lloyd comes to the realization of, when he talks to his wife, I'm just at times really angry. Like that was the lesson learned, right? So that was kind of the downward calming down, and then we had that last act and his dad apologizing and all of that. But his journey of going, having the chasing Mr. Rogers, having that dream sequence, being the rabbit, all of that for me was the emotional climax. It was supposed to be kind of the most intense point that we then learn from moving forward.
Yeah. Can I just say, by the way, just to rewind to nerding out for a second, I loved that sequence. Yeah. I loved the fever dream sequence. I love that I can't tell you exactly where reality stops and surreality begins in that sequence, except for that when he wakes up, he's back to real life. I love that.
I had no idea where he was going to wake up.
Yeah, no.
Like, is he back in the hospital?
He wakes up in Mr. Rogers' house.
Yeah.
I love it.
And they're playing the pianos anyway.
It's so great. Yeah. So I think that the real story here for me is it's because we're given a look at somebody who is so deeply emotionally injured by their relationship with a specific person, with an incredibly important person, him with his father, that his situation appears to be basically hopeless.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's so bad that the slightest interaction at this wedding results in an actual fight.
Yeah.
Like a fist fight with his father. And they're not like from Jersey, right?
Yeah,
like, this is not those wacky whatever. Yeah. Like these two people who, you know, it seems like they would just be at this, you know, whatever. And then they're in this fist fight and it's this horrific relationship, hopeless. And that the only way, and this is good storytelling, right? The only way that he can be saved from that is through a device that is specific to the story. So Mr. Rogers is the saving grace that comes in and is the X factor that changes the situation enough, basically is salvific for Matthew Reese's character, for Lloyd Vogel. I think that the big story here is about Mr. Rogers bringing a human power into this narrative and into the story and into Lloyd Vogel's life that we don't often see and that we need to see more often because it is so powerful, but it's so hard to do. And the human power that he brings is attention.
Yeah.
And he brings nearly perfect sympathetic attention to Lloyd Vogel. And that actually is all that is needed. It's not that he has magic words to say.
Yeah.
It's not that he has this exact experience that he can relate and he doesn't actually, and you said he seems to just know what he's thinking. And the thing that I think is so wonderful is that, so we learn in the beginning that he only agreed to be interviewed because he'd read his past work. So he knows that this guy is cynical.
Yeah.
He knows he's cynical, and because Mr. Rogers has made a study of human behavior and human psychology and pain, like, for his whole life, he knows that that's probably really good evidence that this guy is in pain.
Yeah.
And so when he says, I'm willing to be interviewed by him, he genuinely wants to meet him. And he wants to meet him because he just wants to be in the same room with him and have an opportunity to have a conversation so that and you don't understand Mr. Rogers' motivations perfectly because he's not the main character, but you get the sense that he wants to see maybe if he can help.
Yeah.
But he's just gonna show up and listen, and he's gonna be so attentive that it's like basically undoes Lloyd Vogel.
Yeah.
Like,
So it's illustrated in the first time that these two characters interact, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah.
The first time they interact is that Lloyd gets a phone call, and it's Mr. Rogers on the other end. And in Lloyd's house are all of these mothers and all of these babies, and there's a funky smell, and there's diapers, and there's noise, and there's all of these distractions. And he gets a phone call, and he's like, yeah, Mr. Rogers, I'd like to interview you. Is there a time that I can call? And Mr. Rogers is like, well, we're talking right now. Which then forces Lloyd to remove all of those distractions, go outside, and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the line of dialogue of Mr. Rogers saying, you know what's the most important thing to me right now? Being on the phone with Mr. Lloyd Vogel, right? And like, that's the most important thing. And so it's like the way that Mr. Rogers lives his life and the philosophy by which he lives his life forces Lloyd outside of everything. It pushes him because it's so unfamiliar and so not his life, because he's working. He doesn't want to be distracted. He has a baby back home
that
didn't take any time off ever. Like, he's just he's constantly going. And then Mr. Rogers is so much the opposite. When Lloyd shows up for the first time, Mr. Rogers, they're 30 minutes behind schedule, which a film set is always behind schedule. So the fact that it's 30 minutes because he's sitting there giving a child proper attention, and it's just so foreign to Lloyd. Like, all these people are waiting, and Mr. Rogers is giving this one kid extra attention. And it's just, it's so foreign to Lloyd that that's what fascinates him, but it's also what, like, unravels him. He just, mm-hmm. he's this ball of stress that then just becomes something completely different.
One of the things I love so much about this story is that Mr. Rogers is the perfect foil for Lloyd in that aspect. Because when you are in the position of Lloyd Vogel, his problem is not just that, oh, there's a damaged relationship with his father and that's sad and it's better if your father and you have a good relationship. No, the problem is that his relationship with his father is so toxic and so horrible that it is always on his mind. There's never a time when he is not thinking in some way about how bad, or like, even if it's just, if it's something he's trying not to think about, it's still something that's in his mind.
Yeah.
He is haunted by this horrible relationship, so that Lloyd Vogel can't give anybody good attention.
Yeah.
He can't pay attention to anybody or anything in a perfect way. Not even most of his attention. At any given point, most of his attention is spent trying to deal with this horrible fact of his relationship with his father, which is why he hates seeing his father, because every time his father's in the same room, it becomes the only thing he can possibly think about at all. He can't even carve out a tiny bit of attention for anything else.
And I dare say that it's probably the reason that he has a really hard time seeing his kid.
Yes.
Is because if you hate your father and then you're holding a child and you're the father, what thinking about fatherhood.
Yeah. What else are you going to think about?
That's all you can possibly think about. And so even when he's given the child, like, hey, it's your turn, and he's sitting on the couch, he like he's like almost afraid of the baby. Yeah. So it's amazing.
So the emotional journey that he needs to take is reconciliation with his father, or at least with his relationship to his father, with himself essentially, own perception of his father. Independent of whether his father does, but you know, it dovetails. But that is done by essentially the unrelenting perfect example of sympathetic human attention that Mr. Rogers has with work and time and great care developed, so that it has become the skill that he can then use to help everyone around him. And so that's what he does. And that's what this movie is about. It's about Mr. Rogers showing Lloyd Vogel, giving Lloyd Vogel this perfect gift of human sympathetic attention that then essentially like is the catalyst that helps Lloyd heal. And the thing that I love about the way that the story is told, and about the way that there are no, and what we were talking about earlier, that it's not pulling any punches, is that it's really hard for Mr. Rogers to do this.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And in every single scene, most of your sympathies are with Lloyd Vogel because he's the protagonist. You're seeing everything from his perspective. And it is deeply uncomfortable to be with somebody who focuses on you that intensely when you are traumatized and having a hard time dealing with yourself.
Yeah, you're trying to avoid yourself.
Yeah, and this person is like only thinking about you.
Yeah,
and so it's a very unsettling experience. But if you're in Mr. Rogers' shoes, this is not an easy thing. If you think about what he does, it looks like saint. It looks like he's a saint because most people are like, I'm not going to put in that much effort. I don't see how I possibly could.
Yeah,
but for him, it's the thing that he's worked the hardest at his whole life. And so we get to see the incalculable benefit that he can be to this other man by having focused his attention and focused himself on developing that skill of just being present for someone.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely beautiful. And it's really also really demanding. Because if you watch this movie, you realize that Mr. Rogers was real and that there's no reason that you and I can't do what he does.
Totally.
There's no reason.
Totally.
There's literally no excuses left.
It's so frustrating.
And so now it's just amazing.
Yeah. So I want to talk about one of my favorite scenes. It's up there. Might be my favorite. And that is when Mr. Rogers comes to New York and they take a moment and they go to to Mr. Rogers' apartment in New York and they sit down to talk, and Mr. Rogers just breaks through every defense mechanism that Lloyd has to not talk about his feelings and his relationship with his father. Excuse me. And Mr. Rogers just gets through all of that and awkwardly uses puppets as well. And it's where the story of the rabbit comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just defense. I don't want to talk about this. And then he just loops it back around because Mr. Rogers knows how important it is for him to talk about it. And then they talk about Mr. Rogers' two kids. And you start to see for a second through masterful acting that maybe Mr. Rogers – so Mr. Rogers is talking to Lloyd about his father, but maybe Mr. Rogers wasn't the perfect father. And Lloyd says almost hurtfully, but I don't think it was really with malintent. It just was it was the cynical part of Lloyd speaking.
Yeah.
Where he says, you know, having Mr. Rogers as your father probably would be really hard on your sons. And then it's just a close-up shot on Mr. Rogers kind of taking that moment and thinking about his children and saying, you're right, that probably wasn't easy.
And he says, thank you for that perspective.
Thank you for that perspective.
And it's like totally guileless. He's not like it's there's nothing about
that. There's no bite back. Yeah, there's nothing.
It's just like genuine gratitude for like helping him see something that he hadn't seen.
And I like, The reason I wear Superman stuff is because I want to always be better. I am searching constantly. It's a reminder that I want to be the best person that I can be. In that moment, Mr. Rogers was the most perfect version of me that I could ever imagine. That ability to give just absolute focus and attention on this guy that does not want it, but needs it. And then when the tables are turned, you practice what you preach. And you say, thank you. Like, that's the attention you just gave me. That moment of consideration to my life that you just gave me is very important to me. Now let me reciprocate. It was, I don't know, I'm not entirely sure why it was so powerful for me, but it was a moment that took my breath away. And was just so, it was just, Tom Hanks is so good. He was so good. I'm glad he got nominated. He probably won't win, but I'm glad he got nominated.
He doesn't need to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. He got back to back. He's good.
What a lovely movie.
It's a movie that you end up thinking about a lot. Like, there's not the conversation that my father and I had after we saw this movie was. It's almost reverent. Like, there's a reverence to this movie. But the conversation that we had, so this was the big aha I had about this movie that made it to my top 10. And that was the very significant moment after this giant climax of crazy emotions and lessons being learned and everything. We get a moment where the dad is on his deathbed and Lloyd is just brand new, emotionally mature enough to be able to be in the same place as his dad
and not punch him
and even makes the emotional sacrifice to take care of him while he's dying, which is what the dad did not do for the mother. So it's like, it's not only are you like kind of forgiving your father and moving forward, it's that you're doing the very thing that he refused to do to the person that you loved the most. Anyway, it's very beautifully executed. And the moment that the dad says, I'm sorry, like, I was young, I was stupid, and I'm so sorry. And not like the, I'm sorry, okay? But like the genuine, yeah, I'm sorry, was so impactful for me. And I finally started to get attached to the father. I talked to my dad about it afterwards, and his perspective on it was too little, too late. Didn't like the father. Didn't like him at all. Felt no forgiveness. Too little, too late. I'm glad you're dying. Goodbye. And I was like, what in the world? How could you possibly feel that? And then I remembered, and I've mentioned this before, but I remembered that my dad's relationship with his father is not a good one. His father left. And I don't think he's ever heard I'm sorry from his father. And neither of them are on their deathbed, but it's too little, too late, right? And so the conversation that I had with my dad after this movie, I had a conversation with my dad about his dad and the relationship that he had with his dad, leading to how he was a father to me, which is then leading to how I will be a father. It was exactly what this movie wanted, because this movie is talking about, like, yes, there's Lloyd and his story and everything, but what it's also getting across is that Fred Rogers was the kind of person that had a kid's TV show that was on for a long time, and the effect that he had on individuals, that attention, that just pure, genuine attention that he would give one individual, changed that individual's life and changed that individual's relationship with those people around him, that Mr. Rogers affected generations of people, and that his ability to have that TV show and what he did on that TV show affected just generations upon generations. It was illustrated on the subway, where every different kind of person, every age, every ethnicity, all sang the Mr. Rogers song, right? So it's illustrated there. But then you have Lloyd, who he finally repairs his relationship with his dad, and which in return repairs his relationship with his son, and then his son is going to be better off and have a better relationship with his dad. So it's generations. So that's what the movie was. And then the movie's over, and I turn around and I have a conversation with my dad that affects generations. His relationship with his dad, my relationship with him, and my relationship with my kid. It was amazing to me that this movie was able to do that, inspire that conversation. So that was why it was one of my favorite movies of the year, and it just was so beautiful, and I take it with, and it's like so close to the heart. Anyway, very effective, very, very cool ability that movie had to inspire conversations.
Last thing that all of what you just said kind of drives home the point to me that the truth that human goodness is more effective and contagious and powerful than human badness. Mm. It's really easy to look at crap that people do and pain that people cause and mistakes that people make and think, man, like, we're just doomed. Like, people, you know, how the cascading negative consequences of like one selfish action are just breathtaking. But I think that the opposite is more true. Because Mr. Rogers is one guy.
Yeah.
One guy who is trying to do, like, one thing really well. And has had enormous impact that just continues. Because now there's a movie that's got Oscar buzz. And so lots of people are going to see it. Lots of people have seen it. Lots of conversations like this one are happening. And it's because – it's just because he did the best he could.
Yeah.
And it was one person. And I think that, I mean, if you just think, like, what could one more person do, you know? What could 10 more people do? Yeah. What could 1,000 people do who were trying as hard as Mr. Rogers was trying to be good and to just pay attention to people and to just love them? And the consequences of that are so much longer lasting and farther reaching. And I mean, more
he's been passed away for how long, and we're still
talking.
The effects, the ripple effects, are still there.
So that's my biggest takeaway from this film is that not only is the goodness of Mr. Rogers attainable, imminently attainable, but that it is way more powerful than being crappy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The end.
I agree.
Good.
I'd like to end it there.
Cool. Cool. Well, folks, I think
it's still going. Yeah, yeah. I had to make sure it was still going.
Oh, yeah. The battery's almost out.
The low battery thing popped up. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's still recording.
Cool. Well, then we'll say goodbye to our watchers and our listeners, and we are going to be back this Friday with an episode on Just Mercy.
Yes.
Which has some similar themes.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah.
Before we go, just a reminder to get in touch. We want to share more stuff from you guys. Absolutely. So send us stuff to share, and we'll share it. We're excited. And share this show with your friends, because it's great. I mean, think Nerd Critic is great. And so do you, because you're still here.
Yes. Thank you for all of the listeners. Seriously. Thank you for taking the time to listen, taking the time to share. We have a lot of people that will share our show, and they're effective with it.
Yeah.
And what's cool about it is when you share the show, like, they now have people that they, one, have something more in common with, and two, get to talk about.
Yeah.
They have something to talk about. So it's been really cool to run into or meet the occasional fan, and they talk about the different episodes, and they know all of my thoughts on movies, and they geek out, and it's like a fun community to be a part of. It's cool. I really enjoy it. And a part of that community is Michael Baumiller.
Yeah.
Who we want to thank for the music.
Yes. Thank you, Michael Von Miller, for the music.
That segue was...
Yeah, no, it was amazing. On point. Totally amazing. On point. You stuck that landing.
I did.
So, on that note, on these notes from Michael Von Miller, remember to collect movies like a nerd and rewatch them like a critic.
And cut.